In sleep, we dream of only two forms of government, anarchy and monarchy. Primordial root consciousness understands no politics and never plays fair. Democratic dream, a socialist dream, impossible. Whether my REMs bring me vertical, near-prophetic visions, or mere Viennese wish fulfillment, only kings and wild people populate my night. Monads and nomads. Pallid day, when nothing shines by its own light, slinks and insinuates and suggests that we compromise with a sad and lackluster reality. But in dream, we are never ruled except by love or sorcery, which are the skills of chaos and sultans. Among a people who cannot create or play but can only work, artists also know no choice but anarchy and monarchy. Like the dreamer, they must possess and do possess their own perceptions. And for this, they must sacrifice the merely social to a tyrannical muse. Art dies when treated fairly. It must enjoy a caveman's wildness or else have its mouth filled with gold by some prince. Bureaucrats and sales personnel poison it, professors chew it up, and philosophers spit it out. Art is a kind of Byzantine barbarity, fit only for nobles and heathens. If you had known the sweetness of life as a poet in the reign of some venal, corrupt, decadent, ineffective, and ridiculous pasha or emir, some Khwaja Shah, some King Farouk, some Queen of Persia, you would know that this is what every anarchist must want. How they love poems and paintings, those dead, luxurious fools. How they absorbed all roses and cool breezes, tulips and lutes. Hate their cruelty and caprice, yes, but at least they were human. The bureaucrats, however, who smear the walls of the mind with odorless filth, so kind, so gemütlich, who pollute the inner air with numbness, they're not even worthy of hate. They scarcely exist outside the bloodless ideas they serve. And besides, the dreamer, the artist, the anarchist, do they not share some tinge of cruel caprice with the most outrageous of moguls? Can genuine life occur without some folly, some excess, some bouts of Heraclean strife? We do not rule, but we cannot and will not be ruled. In Russia, the Narodnik anarchists would sometimes forge a ukase or manifesto in the name of the Tsar. In it, the autocrat would complain that greedy lords and unfeeling officials had sealed him in his palace and cut him off from his beloved people. He would proclaim the end of serfdom and call on peasants and workers to rise in his name against the government. Several times, this ploy actually succeeded in sparking revolts. Why? Because the single absolute ruler acts metaphorically as a mirror for the unique and utter absoluteness of the self. Each peasant looked into this glassy legend and beheld his or her own freedom. An illusion, but one that borrowed its magic from the logic of the dream. Among a people who cannot conceive human society without a monarch, the desires of radicals may be expressed in monarchical terms. Among a people who cannot conceive human existence without a religion, radical desires may speak the language of heresy. Taoism rejected the whole Confucian bureaucracy, but retained the image of the emperor sage who would sit silent on his throne, facing a propitious direction, doing absolutely nothing. In Islam, the Ismailis took the idea of the imam of the prophet's household and metamorphosed it into the imam of one's own being, the perfected self who is beyond all law and rule, who is atoned with the One. And this doctrine led them into revolt against Islam, to terror and assassination in the name of pure esoteric self-liberation and total realization. Once, anarch and king clutched each other's throats and waltzed the tortentanz, a splendid battle. Now, however, both are relegated to history's trash bin. Has-beens, curiosities of a leisurely and more cultivated past. They whirl around so fast they seem to meld together. Can they somehow have become one thing? A Siamese twin, a Janus, a freakish unity. The sleep of reason. Ah, most desirable and desirous monsters. Ontological anarchy proclaims flatly, bluntly, and almost brainlessly, yes, the two are now one. As a single entity, the anarchy king is now reborn. Each of us, the ruler of our own flesh, our own creations, and as much of everything else that we can grab onto and hold. Anarchism is dead. Long live anarchy. We no longer need the baggage of revolutionary masochism or idealist self-sacrifice, or the frigidity of individualism with its disdain for conviviality of living together, or the vulgar superstitions of 19th century atheism, scientism, progressism, all that dead weight, frowsy proletarian suitcases, heavy bourgeois steamer trunks, boring philosophical portmanteau over the side with them. We want from these systems only their vitality, their life forces, daring, intransigence, anger, heedlessness, their power, their shakti. Before we jettison the rubbish in the carpet bags, we'll rifle the luggage for billfolds, revolvers, jewels, drugs, and other useful items. Keep what we like and trash the rest. Why not? Are we priests of a cult to croon over relics and mumble our martyrologies? Monarchism too has something we want, a grace, an ease, a pride, a superabundance. We'll take these and dump the woes of authority and torture in history's garbage bin. Mysticism has something we need. Self-overcoming, exalted awareness, reservoirs of psychic potency. These we will expropriate in the name of our insurrection and leave the woes of morality and religion to rot and decompose. As the ranters used to say when greeting any fellow creature, from king to cut purse, rejoice, all is ours.